Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to another, what I believe will be, or what could be set up to be, a thrilling episode of Press One for Democracy with a very hot and controversial topic on hand, which actually came to me while I was having a discussion with my good friend Egberto Willis on his Blog Talk Radio show, which is heard on Coffee Party Radio every Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, noon Central, and 11 for us. No, you know what? Did I get that right? Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. Yes. I'm sorry. 10 p.m. or 10 a.m. for Eastern Standard Time. So there you go. Off for my one and only mistake for the evening. Apologize for that, folks. But anyway, it came to me while we were having a discussion about some right-wing folks or some let's call them conservative folks that are actually coming out and being actually pro-safety net and some other nice things about what I like to call socialism. And it came to me, and it's something that I said on Egberto's show. I said socialism is not only necessary, but it's good. It's good. It is the necessary counterbalance to unfettered capitalism, which is, of course, what we've had in this country for the past 35, some people say 50 years or so, either way. So on the Facebook post prefacing this show, which probably will allow me to get my thoughts together a little bit better here, was this. It's very simple. Free marketers, capitalists, and corporatists have been quite successful in demonizing socialism over the past 50 years. But what exactly is socialism? By definition, socialism is a political and economic theory of social organization that advocates that the means of production, distribution, and exchange should be owned, and here's the key part, folks, or regulated by the community as a whole. Now, that just does not strike me as being very evil. And again, I argued to the contrary. I would argue that socialism is the obvious and necessary balance to capitalism, or at least capitalism operating without a conscience, as it has done in large part in the U.S. over the past 50 years. What do you think? So that's what we want to talk about tonight, and I hope that we get, as we did on the Facebook post, a good smattering of both free marketers, of people with the libertarian position, and other, you know, conservative people who think that socialism is this evil thing, and oh my God, to be called a socialist. And that's kind of where it came from, right? We have a guy that calls in every once in a while called the One Angry Jew. If you're a regular listener to the show, you know him. I've decided that I've given him a new nickname. I call him Megatroll because that's just what he does. But not tonight. We're not going to let that happen tonight. So he called in and he said, oh, so you're a, to Egberto Willis, he said, oh, you're a closet socialist. And he goes, no, I don't think I'm any, it's not a closet, I'm not a closet socialist at all. And I was just proud of my friend for standing up and saying socialism, to some extent, in as much as it balances unfettered capitalism, is a good and necessary thing. We long ago decided that we were going to form a society. You notice it's society. And socialism both have the same root word. It's about cooperatively living together in with common areas and common grounds, if you will. If like you have in an HOA, you have common grounds, right? And with common endeavors and common dreams, and those things are all shared. And it is obviously much more from an economic standpoint. Cooperation allows you to do things that you could not do individually. And it is my assertion that if you look at the history of the United States economically, from right after the Civil War to about 100 years later when we had climbed to become, in 100 years, the preeminent economic superpower in the world, I mean, how did we do that? I argue that there's no way we could have done that without the progressive initiatives that were seen during that century. I'm talking about things like roads, the power grid, and most recently, responsible for a huge economic boon in this country is the thing called the Internet, which all of these things were derived from government control or government-controlled, either government-controlled projects or government in partnership with private capital. And I was kind of struggling for some other examples, and then I got up from my desk in my 700-square-foot apartment right here that overlooks the Willamette River, and I looked out at it, and I'm looking at it now, and I'm going to try to describe to you what I can see, all these wonderful, wonderful examples of socialism and socialism and capitalism where they've come together to do things that, again, neither one of them could do by themselves as well, right? So to my left, there's 13 bridges. If you know Portland at all, there's 13 bridges on the river, and I live to my left is the Broadway Bridge. It was built in 1910, and to my right is the Steel Bridge, which was built right after that in 1911. Steel Bridge is an amazing bridge. It's a double-decker bridge with railroad tracks on the bottom and then cars and public transport on the top. And the cool thing is that the bottom part, the railroad tracks, moves up and down in a piston-like motion, and so it it doesn't have to disturb the top layer. So traffic and the public transportation can continue to go across it even when the train track portion is raised, in order to let bigger ships go through, right? And now I'm looking, staring, actually happens to be one of the barges parked right across the street from me, and it's in front of a granary that was built by a private firm that stores grain, and then we get ships that come in, and of course all that good private trade that we see. A lot of it which is subsidized because it is all granary, right? It's all grain, so it's all subsidized. But it comes in and out of this river called the Willamette River. And the Willamette River was originally just a basic tributary of the Columbia, and they dredged it out and they made it so that shipping could come in. And really, it's the river that birthed the name Portland, because it is the main port, or was the main port, for Portland, right? So here we have a massive civil engineering project by the government. There's your socialism, right? And we have all this private shipping and grain trade that is made possible through this partnership, right, or empowered by, right? And this is where you get into that Elizabeth Warren, you know, nobody does it by themselves, right? And I think that's really probably one of the better ways that I've ever heard. Yeah, socialism, at least a little bit, you have to give back. You have to pay back. Now, across the river, I'm looking also at what is now called the Moda Center. It used to be called the Rose Garden, where the Portland Trail Blazers play. And that was put up by private and public funds partnership. And it's right next to the Coliseum, which is the older stadium. Beatles actually played there in the 60s. Also a private and publicly funded project. So I get to sit here and look out on all of this wonderful, these wonderful examples of why it is important that we do not allow, or maybe we should call it take back, the concept that socialism is wrong from these people, these free marketers who say, oh, government should just stay out of everything. It should be, you should be able to drown it in the bathtub. I mean, obviously, when government works, and I'm not saying it always does, but when government works, then it works well, and it is good for all, and all boats do have a chance to rise with the tide. So enough of my babbling. This is a call-in show. This is your show. This is your time to call in. Tell me I'm wrong. Please, somebody call me and tell me I'm wrong. Explain to me why I'm wrong. I'm always open to have that conversation. The number to call in at is 646-929-2495. And so please call in, and when you get into the queue, just hit 1, and that'll put the little electronic hand on up for me, and it'll let me know that you want to participate in the conversation. So I say capitalism is a good thing. It's a necessary thing, and you can call and agree with me. That's okay. I don't mind being told I'm right. I do get it right every once in a while, I think. Also, obviously, if you want to call me and tell me why I'm wrong, then you can do that as well. So while we're waiting for our first caller, I wanted to go back. I like to go back and review the comments. We actually got 141 comments and almost 50,000 views on this particular post this morning on the Facebook page. And I think you could pretty much encapsulate it into three responses. And that is people agreeing with me saying socialism is good, people saying no, socialism is horrible. And a lot of those, there were various reasons for that. And then there were a couple of our good liberty friends, because I say liberty because Bobby Rodrigo doesn't like me saying libertarian, although these guys are, they would pretty much comp to being libertarians, but saying that no, it can only be free markets. So some of the comments really said, well, you know what, it's government and government just doesn't work. And they point to all the failures of government. And I can tell you, I would take a challenge to say that I can name five things that work that were successful government projects for every one that you can tell me is a failure. Then the more pointed, I think, though, the more pointed and accurate aspects of where government fails us really comes in the form of what's happened over the last 35 years. And that is, remember, there's two definitions of socialism or two potential outcomes for socialism. One is where the community owns the means of production, and the other one is where it regulates it. And I think to a good part, we've decided that the regulation is really more the way that we do things in the United States. But what's happened is that we now have the regulators coming from within the regulated and then going back, right, in that revolving door, and big corporations and the like being able to wield their influence so that the regulation is either done away with or it's there, but it's had basically its teeth removed. It's a paper tiger. And over the last 35 years, with that playing field being set in that position, what we've seen is obviously corruption and the ability of these same corporations that are supposed to be regulated to be able to run amok in markets, virtually free markets, which is where I always get back to my good friends who want free markets and unfettered markets and no unregulated markets and say, well, how has that worked out for us in the last 35 years? Not so much. So, this is Dan Aronson on Press One for Democracy. And if you'd like to get in on the conversation, give us a call, 646-929-2495. And go ahead and hit 1 and let me know you want to get in. Maybe I've just come across a topic where all of my regular listeners agree with me, so maybe they don't want to call in. But as I always like to say, the last thing anybody wants to hear is me babbling for an hour or more. So again, please feel free to call in. And somebody has bailed me out here. So 360, I'm opening your microphone. Who do we have the pleasure of speaking with?
Hey, how you doing today?
Good. Who's this?
This is Anthony Brown. I'm in Blaine, Washington, about 7 blocks away from the border up on I-5 in Washington State.
Oh, I was just there yesterday. I was in Jansen Beach.
Are you serious?
I am dead,
awesome.
Dead serious. Anthony, how can we? What do you have to say about this discussion here?
Well,
kick us off with a thought about capitalism versus socialism.
First of all, on the Blog Talk Radio, I think that the reason why people aren't calling in is because when I go on there, and it looks like, you know, it says play, you can press it, and it's supposed to play, and it was supposed to come on, you know, at 6 o'clock Pacific time, 9 o'clock Eastern time. Right now it says, live, 1 hour, 45 minutes remaining. Okay, but I was a little bit confused because I thought I was supposed to press play, and I was like, well, maybe they're not really going, but okay, so you guys
are good. So you're listening online?
No, I can't listen online. That's the thing.
Okay.
I had to call in. So.
Oh, so you were
looking
at the chat window.
So that could be a reason why.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So I don't think then we're having technical difficulties. Is that what I'm hearing?
I hope not. I mean, I thought I was going to be able to listen to it online, and maybe other people thought that. And they did. It looks like it only, you know, it looks like it says, you know, call in to speak to the host, and that's the only thing that you would call in for, not to call in to listen to it. And I was surprised when I could listen to it on the phone.
Oh,
so,
yeah, yeah. No, no. So that's SOP. So some people prefer to call in if they're not around if they're not around a internet connection. Right. You can call in and just listen. And then if you had one, that just puts it up there on the board and tells me you want to join the conversation. So,
yeah,
so now that you joined the conversation.
Yeah, it could be only my computer, and I mean that could be, or you know, I just wanted to help you guys out. But yeah, I mean, I agree. Something has to give. You know, we need to give socialism a try. It's doing it more and more. And we see that it works in smaller countries in Northern Europe and, you know, Sweden, Norway, Finland, and they, you know, time and time again have the happiest populaces, you know, out of the world. Of course, you know, they have a mixture of capitalism and socialism. But, I mean, the kind of like, you know, Venus Project type of guy, resource-based economy sort of deal is what I think would work the best, you know, in the long run. I think something like Norway or something like that could be tried here in the United States. The naysayers say, oh, you know, it's just, we're too big for that. You know, they have small countries and it's really easy to do, but those are, you know, they're apologists. They're just making excuses for not trying to do something. If we get more people into politics, I'm not exactly sure how we would do it, like Bernie Sanders, you know, people like that, then we could really transform this country and this world into something amazing.
I would totally agree with you. And, you know, one of the things that I was called out for, and maybe I wasn't specific enough when I had just written my little short post on the Facebook page today, but, you know, people were saying, no, yeah, corporations are no good, but neither is unchecked government, and I don't see why we should go ahead and, you know, socialize everything. And you know, my response was, I don't advocate for a socialist, a socialization of all markets and all business. I don't think pure socialism is the answer either. I just wanted to say that we just need it in as much as we need to balance off unfettered capitalism. And, you know, I think here, this was my exact retort. I said, just to repeat, I am not advocating for a socialist system. I'm saying, as many others here said, it is necessary to balance unfettered capitalism. The meteoric rise of U.S. As an economic superpower was due to cooperative efforts such as roads, power grids, and most recently the Internet. Without these things created by the whole, the economy would never have taken off at the rate it did. The socialism I am advocating simply ensures that people repay the whole for its contribution to each individual person's successes. If capitalists were willing to do so voluntarily, there would be no need for socialism. We wouldn't need it if these people were willing to voluntarily give back. I see this as a, you left me no choice here, and now I have to put my foot, you know, down, and I'm sorry, I'm going to have to, I don't want to, I really don't. I really love the, you know, live and live kind of philosophy, but you got to play cooperatively, you know, and as I always say, I don't mind if people go off in the, you know, to the mountains of Montana all by themselves, take themselves off the grid, and you know, live however they want. I don't care. But as long as you're connected to my power grid and you're using my internet, and connected to our power grid, using our internet, using our sewer systems, consuming things that are brought to you over our roads, then no, you've got to pay. You have to.
Right. Right. Very true. You know, are you familiar with Jacques Fresco, resource-based economy? They really don't call it socialism, but it is. Technocracy.
Is that what they were referring to? Somebody pointed up the Venus Project on the site this
right.
morning.
Yeah, right.
I looked at that, and it looked interesting.
You know, automated unemployment, you know, unemployment automation, more robots, more technology, using what we already have and pooling our resources, getting all that tax money from these billionaires out there. There's trillions of dollars out there that aren't taxed. Get all that stuff, you know, quit wasting money on wars and on, you know, all these types of war machines that we use to perpetuate conflicts and to waste our tax money, and put it into infrastructure and technology and have it take off, right? And the proliferation of technology will solve, I think, 100% of the problems we have right now, as far as greed, as far as hunger, as far as war, all of that. We have the resources, not like we don't. In the resource-based economy, it is scientists actually saying, okay, there's this many people, 700,000 people that live in Seattle. They can, you know, they can live off, you know, this much of aeroponic building, you know, or something like that, or this many buildings of aeroponics that, you know, farm land upwards or downwards, you know, under the ground instead of, you know, farming everywhere. Just more efficient ways of doing things. And, you know, it's not like we don't have enough space for everybody to live, you know, a comfortable life and to feed everybody in the world. It's the capitalist system that makes everybody think that there's always scarcity. And, you know, and that's what they do, is they peddle fear in the people and they make everybody think that they need to, you know, fight to live. And then they're taking all of the resources. They're taking, you know, all of the they're basically taking everything for themselves so they can make profit. And it's just really not working. As far as socialism, you know, people always talk about, oh, well, it was Hitler was a socialist. You know, the National Socialist. That has
no. Hitler was a fascist. Hitler was a fascist.
Yeah, he was.
I mean, he called himself a socialist. Yeah, well, you could call, you know, I could call myself a world class downhill skier, but just don't put me on skis because you'll find out that's not the case. I mean,
right. Well, I mean, and they say, you know, USSR didn't work. Look at China. Look at Cuba. Blah blah blah. I mean, you know.
Those things all
totalitarian.
They claim to be socialist, but the fact is that the USSR and Cuba were communists. And there's a huge deal, and I had to go back and I had to define communism, because a lot of people mistakenly think of socialism and communism as the same thing, and there's a huge difference in that socialism talks about owning and regulating the means of production. Right? We go to the factory.
Right.
And and as employees, we own that, right? We regulate that, or we're part owners or whatever it is, right? But in communism, it's like, it doesn't matter who produces it, private, public, or otherwise, we're all splitting up everything that's created. And that
communism,
system...
Communism, everything is publicly owned. Each person works and is paid according to their abilities and needs.
Yeah, and that's not a real tenable solution. I mean, with socialism, you can have socialism does not preclude the idea of capitalism, because especially democratic socialism. When you get into that, and that's what the Green Party is all about, right? Because if it's micromanaged socialistically, right? If we all go to the company, right? If like you work for Boeing and I work for Airbus, and it's all owner, you know, it's all employee owned, we still compete against each other. And maybe I do better in some years than you do, and you do better than I do. But what you don't have, what socialism really is good at, is wiping out this income inequality that we have, right, and this wealth inequality that we have. And that's, you know, where the CEOs are getting paid 400 or 500 times more than the average worker. That's what socialism is good for. And, communism, not so much. In communism, there's really no reason. All reason for entrepreneurship is taken away because no matter what I do, it's all going to get split up, right? So,
well, I mean,
so listen, I appreciate
you.
Go ahead.
And I think, hold on. Sorry. I think that's okay. I mean, you know, if, for instance, I'm going to say the Venus Project again. I'm going to bring up Jacques Fresco and the resource-based economy. And this stuff is done by the scientific method. So they break it down to, these equations about as far as splitting up resources and making sure everybody has as much as they want, making sure they can, you know, travel whenever they want and work minimally but in what they want to work in and solving problems, you know, always solving problems. They estimate that every single person could live a life of somebody who makes $250,000, $300,000 a year, only works half the time. You know, it's voluntary. All the problems are being solved by technology. You don't have people flipping burgers. You don't have people lifting up concrete. It's all, you know, information based. You know, it's more about what you want to do and solving problems. And if, that, I why not? Why not?
Well,
I would,
if we could,
I wouldn't mind
if we could, yeah, there's two,
having whatever I want at any time.
All right, I would want to do
what I want to do. I wouldn't not do anything. I'm a motivated person.
Hold on a second. Anthony, hold on. Let me ask you a couple of questions about this, right? First of all, it struck me that this has to be a global decision taken. I don't think you can do this in the vacuum of a specific country. I think either all the world has to go along with it or it's not going to work. Does that make sense? I can't stop other people from warring on me, right? I can stop myself from warring, but I can't stop people from warring on me.
Unless you have real defense instead of, you know, I'm going to preemptively strike somebody. If you work on actual security and not striking folks, then maybe you could. If you have type of, you know, force field stuff like that, you know, or whatever.
Well, right, exactly, and see, that's where I went with this. I went, this is exactly the kind of society that they said that they portrayed on Star Trek. This is exactly the time we don't pursue money. It's not about making money anymore, because we can make food, come out of a machine, and boom, we just walk up and say, here, give me a hamburger, and boom, you got a hamburger, right? So, I mean, yeah, you're right. If we could get to that point technologically, I just don't see. I mean, I think people should keep pushing for that and keep trying to come up with the scientific discoveries that could get us there. I think it just sounds very utopian to me, and I got nothing wrong with utopia. Don't get me wrong. If I could have it tomorrow and I could wave a magic wand, I'd do it. But I think it's a good goal. I think it's something to strive for.
Right. I'm going to tell you a couple things going on right now. We've got a $4,000 train that travels in tubes. That is ready to be built, that's way less expensive than any type of transportation project that's going on right now. 4,000 miles per hour, and I'm not kidding. What else we got going on? We got 7 acres of land that is being cultivated inside of Seattle, right by downtown. 7 acres of land of just fruits and vegetables and nuts that people can go and pick, right? This is just on 7 acres of land flat. Just imagine we do aeroponics and you start, you know, just not even using soil and creating all of this food for people, you know. There's a lot of technology out there, and I really think you should check out Jacques Fresco, Venus Project. Resource-based economy, RBE. If you can check that out, you know, please do.
Anthony, we will definitely check it out.
Out there.
Definitely check it out. I appreciate it. I got to get on the next caller, but thank you very much for kicking us off. Great call, Anthony. So that's Anthony from the greater Seattle – oh, no, I'm sorry, the greater Portland area, a fellow Northwesterner. We do like our are things like hydroponics and Debbie Lynn Malinow's and aquaponics. That's a little bit different thing. And there's some really radical things going on up here. And Bobby, we try to keep the GMOs out as best we can. But right now I'm going to go to area code 641. This is our good friend. He's known in the chat room as Biz Tutor, but he's known to the rest of us as?
Bob Woodburn.
Bob Woodburn from...
Hello.
From, not Pella. Is it Pella? You're not from
yes.
Pella, are you? Yeah, Pella, Iowa. I knew that. Home of the world's greatest
yep.
windows, I guess.
Yes. I wanted to poke my head in and see how the water tastes, because tonight has an interesting flavor to it. My thought's pretty simple on socialism. Socialism depends on an unselfish attitude. And currently, the United States has become, quote, all about me, end quote.
Yeah, I phrase it slightly differently. I say socialism is necessary because we don't have an unselfish attitude, a prevailing unselfish attitude from big business and corporations.
Right.
Now, one of the people said, "Oh, socialism, schmocialism. Could the government could have never made the iPhone?" And I said, "Well, first of all, yeah, we could. We put a man on the moon. I think the government could have built an iPhone. I'm pretty sure we could have got there if that was actually a goal we set our mind to." I said, "But here's the problem.
Sure
Fine.
DARPA,
the government
I'm
doesn't
pretty
bother
sure DARPA
making
DARPA had the iPhone before we did."
But here was my point to him. I said, "Fine, I'm not." See, and that's another thing. I don't want people to get the idea that I'm anti-rich or anti-corporations. I love them dearly. I said, but again, are they paying back? And here's the thing, right? We let Apple build the iPhone. We government decides not to go and compete against them and make our own iPhone. We're going to let them do the iPhone. But then, what do these bleep bleep bleeps do? They take and they hide all their money in Ireland and other low tax. Rate countries, and they skip out on billions and billions of dollars of tax obligation.
Right.
You know, I say let the greedy bastards make all the money in the world they want, but we tax them fairly, and then everybody wins. But the way the system works now, they get all the profits, and they don't have to give anything back.
Right.
And that's why we need socialism, because they don't have a conscience. They don't care to give back. They just want more money, more money, more money.
Right, and the difficulty is that socialism depends on political and economic cooperation. You have to have that in order for a socialist environment to work. If we didn't have states that cooperate with each other, we wouldn't have the interstate highway system, because this state, that state, or the other state would have said, "Hell no, you're not putting that here," wherever here might be within that state. I mean, if you go back to the 1840s or so, you had the same problem with the railroad barons.
Absolutely, you've of course now just tweaked another one of my favorite subjects to talk about, and that is if the 98% truly represents the middle and the lower classes, even if it's 95%, the reason why the Republicans and Democrats want us at each other's throats is because if we ever got together and decided, you know what, forget this ideology, that ideology, let's first and foremost make sure that we can take care of our families and feed them and clothe them and give them the basic necessities of life, maybe have a vacation every now and then, you know, a nice TV,
right,
whatever, then we would be able to get together and kick that influence out of Washington that is keeping it so that, you know, we can't do that. We can't – how can we get together socially, right? But if we're busy fighting each other.
That's true. And that's why I say that socialism depends on political and economic cooperation. If you do not have the cooperation necessary to tackle a project as big as either the interstate or information superhighway, then you're not going to get either one built.
No, I couldn't agree with you more. And I think I'm trying to remember whether it was either number one or number two, but I think they tried to rate the top technological advances of the 21st century, and
I
believe number one came out to be the power grid, and that when you look at when
the
you just
20th
try to,
or 21st.
21st. That's. Wait, am I
Our
doing that wrong?
Century.
I know one always lags and one always from 1900 to 1999.
That's the 20th century.
Ah, 20th century. Sorry, I apologize. I always
right,
get that
we're
wrong.
We're in the 21st. Okay.
So, yeah.
The
thank
first
you.
Was the power grid.
I think the second was the transistor.
Yeah. And
but I mean, but
and that started
but you,
it all.
Yeah.
To move
but
us
when you
into
think,
the 21st.
Yeah, and when you think about the power grid, and let's face it, and right now our power grid is in desperate need of an upgrade. Right, the rest of the world is going to smart power grids. I mean, right, you know, such that you know the whole idea of smart power grids are such that there, you know, if there's no way you can prevent almost all outages because you have, if one leg of the electrical, you know, of your electricity goes out, then it'll just reroute it a different way, much the same as the internet works. If I send
well,
you an email and part
of,
and it goes down
going,
and one fails, it'll just reroute and get to you. It might get to you a little later, but it gets to you.
Right. Yeah. One thing that I'm finding interesting about the current power grid is that a lot of people are talking about moving to personalized power grids in their own, you know, residences and businesses, wherever those might be. And what that does is go back to Thomas Edison's original idea for DC power.
Okay, you've got me at a technological disadvantage.
Okay. The guy who initially wanted alternating current was Nikola Tesla, okay? Edison originally wanted direct current and thought that would be more feasible, and he lost that particular battle.
Okay, but wasn't that a matter of, and correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't that a matter of distance, that alternating current will go, it will travel a much greater distance than a direct current, and there's also the danger factor, right, that direct current is much more dangerous from a shock perspective.
That's how it played out back then. Now we've got things like surge protectors and all kinds of things that we didn't have back then. You know, we've made tremendous advances beyond the lightning rod.
Okay. I would take you at your word. I am not an electrical engineer, nor have I ever played one on television.
Nor am
so
I. But I mean, I'm aware that even as late as the 80s. A nice lightning storm could knock malls completely on their butt, because I worked for one, and any time we'd have a power spike, I had to log it because it would do horrible things to all the stores. And now with power surges, with surge protectors and things like that, you don't have the entire store community's computer cash register systems going down irretrievably. You know, it's a matter of history. It's a matter of knowing the history of this stuff to decide on how it should be played in light of present events. Because, I mean, when in the 60s or 70s did you wake up and decide that come 40, 50 years from then, you'd be able to carry a phone with you wherever you went and talk to people rather than having to be home when the phone rang?
I certainly didn't ideate that.
Right. Yes. Nor did I. It just kind of sort of happened based on the history of the computer, somebody coming up with the idea that, okay, if we have TV and radio, why can't we do the Dick Tracy type thing? And, oh, by the way, make the phone ring while we're at it.
No, I hear you. I hear you. But even so, but even so, once that happens, now you've got to build these huge cellular networks. Now,
right.
Yes,
and that
takes
AT&T
had a hand in that, as did Verizon, as did T-Mobile, as did all of those companies. But the fact were they were hugely subsidized by the United States government. Hugely subsidized. You know, it's kind of like the old joke about the phone, right? It's like, you know, Bell invents the phone, and then he sits there and he goes, wait, great, who do I call?
Yeah, right, yeah.
It doesn't really have a lot of benefit if it's just for one person. And again, that's the whole idea of the cooperation in these things that connect us, be they roads, be they the information superhighway, phone lines, power grids, et cetera, sewer systems. I mean, you know, without those things that connect us, we just cannot come anywhere near to the progress as individuals as we can as a society. So,
that's true.
So I guess you and I agree. Okay, maybe let's let Bobby Rodrigo in here. Maybe Bobby's our best hope tonight for telling us why socialism is bad.
Before that happens,
sure.
I note two important news events of the day?
Absolutely. If this turns out to be a bad subject, let's talk about something else.
Well, I wanted to bring your listeners two important political pieces of information from where I sit anyway.
All right.
Number one, there is a petition out calling for the state of California, the most liberal, some would say most socialist state in the union, to divide itself into six parts.
Okay.
Six states. Okay. Now,
so the conservatives in Orange County want to secede, huh?
That was my view. That was my thought. Okay. They don't want to secede from the union, but I can tell you where that one's going actually, even if nobody else is paying attention. If you have California divided by six, okay, divided into six, do you know what the net effect of that is on the U.S. Congress?
No, sir.
First of all, it takes 54 electoral votes and divides that into six parts. So instead of having a 54-member delegation in the House, California's delegations would average nine people apiece or nine electoral votes. Okay? The big change would be in the Senate, where California, as a geographic area, would pick up eight total Senate seats.
Okay.
Or pardon me, ten. Excuse me. Ten total Senate seats because they are required all to be equal. I
right.
mean, what it is West Virginia on steroids.
Interesting. Well, who's behind this push? Or
That I don't know. I just happened to read about that 2 days ago. And I thought it was important to press one for democracy on that basis. The second thing is something that happened today that marks the end of an era coming for the U.S. House of Representatives. John Dingell, Dean of the House of Representatives, announced that he will not be seeking re-election.
All right, and how do you see that over, what do you see the overall effect of that being?
The effect of that is that you have a transition from the era, well, let's start with John Dingell having started in the House of Representatives in 1955. He's one of the last of the good old boys as far as the crowd that came in starting with the class of 48 with Strom Thurmond. Okay?
Wow.
He is one of the few remaining people that was part of that crowd that included guys like Strom Thurmond, John Teddy, and Bobby Kennedy, John McCormick, Lyndon Johnson, that whole bunch, okay? You have a connection to the past that is leaving Congress. You have a guy who vividly remembers going to senators' houses for dinner, an era of comity. Not comedy as opposed to tragedy, but comity, C-O-M-I-T-Y.
Okay.
A collegiality, a cooperative veneer, if you will, between the parties and their interests and putting nation before party. This is
the kind of guy you have leaving. I will have to tell you that I would have to do research on the man. I'm not familiar with his body of work. Shame on me, I guess, if he's been around that long and I don't know who he is. But then again, if he's remained that anonymous over the last 20 years or so, while others have stepped to the fore, and maybe he's a calm guy and maybe he's about compromise. And if that's the case, then yes, then obviously if we get rid of him and we get more intractability in there, yeah, that's not a good
right.
thing.
Right. I'll tell you the one thing I'm going to miss most about him being in Congress is watching him in committee, okay? You've got people that overrun their time limit time and time and time and time again. But he has refined questioning to an art form because what he does is he asks only yes or no questions. And he always ends his questions with, you know, do you believe this, that, and the other, yes or no? And if everybody were like that, can you imagine how speedy the committee process would be?
I'm processing that. I don't know. Yes, I see. Do I believe that people would just angle then questions to get people to either say what they want them to say or look bad saying what they don't want them to say? There has to be something more than yes or no to the deliberative process. I mean, because then they get to frame it however they want. And I guess in the right hands, I would say, okay, that's probably a good thing. In the wrong hands, I could see that being a really bad thing. So
yeah. Well, from what I've seen, as far as Zingle's career as a C-SPAN junkie, he's used it well and rightly. He's used it, you know, not to set up a gallows by which people can hang themselves, but to find out the answer to a question without getting a narrative back.
Understood. Yeah, you know, and again, right. And so it's just as incumbent on the person answering the question, or just, I guess not incumbent, but they have also the ability to abuse the system, right, and to not answer questions directly, which I find most politicians themselves don't. Or they can answer honestly. So yeah, no, I see the good and the bad side. There's no doubt. But okay, well, John Dingle, I'm going to have to research that person, and maybe we can talk more about him next week.
Greg's posted some stuff on him too.
Okay.
In the chat room, so go ahead and click on the links because I will too.
Excellent. Yeah, I posted a New York Times story myself. So, yep.
Well, thank you for that.
Well, my pleasure. If you don't mind, though, I can. You want me to leave your mic open as I bring in Bobby and the gang?
No, that's okay. I'll just listen to you and Bobby go at it.
All right, great. Well, before I do that, Bob, thank you very much for the call, and I just want to remind everybody you're listening to Press One for Democracy on Coffee Party Radio. Coffee Party is a member-funded and donor-funded organization. As Janine Loudon likes to say, Citizens United did not help us. We don't have any big PACs or huge dark money organizations shoveling money our way, so we do rely on you. So if you like what you hear tonight, if you like what you hear on the other Coffee Party radio shows, if you like what you're seeing on our Facebook page and our websites, then please do become a member. We like silent members who give us money, but we like even volunteer members. And we are in the process of expanding our organizational structure, and we are looking for a variety of positions, or I should say volunteers to fill a variety of positions. So please go to www.coffeepartyusa.com and click on the Become a Member button, or again, if you just like to donate, you feel free to do that as well. Then you can be a part of this growing movement. But for now, Bobby Rodrigo, your mic is open. How are you this evening?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well. So, topic at hand, socialism. It's a good thing. I say it's a good thing, and I say it's a necessary thing. What do you say?
I say you changed the topic before I got to the show, and I didn't know it.
I changed
the topic. I got an email. You want me to give you three things of what I think are the three priorities in this election year. Was that like, then I turn on the show and I've got capitalism and socialism. I'm like, damn, that's not fair.
Wait, what?
I got an email from Press One from Democracy telling that the subject matter was going to be pick three things that you think should be are important in the 2014 election.
Well, I have to apologize to everybody who got that email, because that certainly was not the email I meant to send out.
When I got to the room, I'm looking and I'm like, okay, I see the gun to the head thing. Okay, what's going on? Okay, so you know, I'm getting into the subject matter, of course.
Bobby?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm
oh, okay.
Trying.
No, you just...
Let's pull away. Roll with it. I like it, Greg. Okay. Socialism in its theory, not necessarily a bad thing per se. All right. But we want solutions within our framework rule of law, correct? Would you agree with that?
Certainly.
Okay. So... why are we trying to talk about something that is not relevant to a fix that we could do without changing our rule of law? So I believe that we have the tools and the rule of law framework that allows us to fix our societal problems, whether it is free market or whatever. The issue that we are faced with is not that capitalism is bad, is that crony capitalism is bad. That's what the problem is in this country. You know, you guys were talking about earlier, for example, Bob was given an example of robber barons, which he absolutely is completely accurate about, as we all know, as one of the fine examples of crony capitalism in our history. But while you guys were talking and while I was getting into the show format, I wanted to look up some definitions. So I'm going to read this to you real quick. Crony capitalism is a term describing an economy in which success in business depends on close relationships between business people and government officials. It may be exhibited by favoritism in the distribution of legal permits, government grants, special tax breaks, or other forms of state interventionism. Crony capitalism is believed to arise when business cronyism and related self-serving behavior by businesses or business people spills over into politics and government, or when self-serving friendships and family ties between businessmen and government influence the economy and society to the extent that it corrupts public-serving economic and political ideals. I don't know of a better example of what we're living with than what I just read. So it isn't capitalism that's destroying us. It's exactly what that definition says, in my view. So why don't we fix a good system and make it right? Without question, this is what we're dealing with. It's what the Coffee Party was founded on. It is what Citizens United allowed unfettered access to. It's what we're waiting for this week to see what the wonderful Supreme Court does with the McCutcheon decision, which is expected this week. For us to hear, if we don't, all the things that you're talking about are so important in the sense of having a community-based mindset or being given back to your society or having to pay for the successes that you have, without question. But we have a framework in this country that allows us to fix these problems if we are not apathetic and we do reach across lines and work together and stop letting these, whatever you want to call them, divide us into little pieces so we live in the identity label world instead of in the fix our world situation on the basis of a very clear distinction of what's going on. We're being ruled by robber barons, by railroad barons. We're back in Grover Cleveland's time. And we might as well ask for another interstate commerce organization or whatever that's called that he created back then in order to stop the railroad barons from running. It's like that, what's that show that's on AMC about the railroad barons? And I've watched a couple of episodes, and it's right on, it's like, oh, my God, it's like I'm watching Wall Street today. So I say, as good as socialism, and I'm not a fan of socialism in any form because it is a community-owned thing. And that is not what I would be a socialism fan if I lived in a country that has the rule of law of socialism, I guess. I want to live within our rule of law. I'm tired of an approach that disregards it. Either we live within our rule of law and our framework properly, or we might as well
tell me where. So you said that several times. Tell me where the concept of socialism and again, there's different definitions out there. I always go with the very simplest one. I Google something and the one that comes up on Google is the one I go with, and it says that it's either owned by or regulated by the whole. Now tell me which laws or which parts of the Constitution are we breaking by either having some publicly owned or some publicly regulated industry.
The Constitution is written for the one man. That is how it's framed. That's why the majority or the collective cannot take something away from the individual in the way it's supposed to be. And of course, we have cronyism that distorts that. The reason that the rule of law works the way it does, in my view, is I have, regardless of what you and Greg do to me, I still have those rights because I'm not granted those rights by government. I have them, and I'm supposed to have them protected. No majority is supposed to be able to take away from. Now, we have crossed those lines. There's no question about it, which makes all of this relevant. All this discussion that we're having obviously is relevant. We're struggling out here. This is, you know, we know that, and we're trying to help. We're always. It seems to me like we're looking away from what we're not using the tools that we have. If we enforce the individual rights of the people in this country being protected, and at the same time, because, again, here's another example of how different ideological political persuasions are exactly the same. Corporate personhood, it's not something that the liberty movement, the alleged conservative liberty movement, agrees with. It certainly is not agreed upon by the left, that is the progressive movement that is fighting against corporate personhood, which is where I came from. And I found that immediate coalition, and I'm like, I'm there. Now we have another group that does it. They absolutely corporations are not people. They're not individuals. We need
to
hold back to the fire.
But talk to me about the 16th Amendment. Talk to me about the 16th Amendment and how that changed things.
Oh boy. Well,
because I mean that obviously, I mean up until that point, I'm with you. But then at the 16th Amendment, they said, no, now we're going to levy this thing called an income tax, and it's not going to be apportioned among the states, and we're going to create this fund, and we're going to do some cool things with it.
Well, you know, from the liberty standpoint, the 16th, the 17th, and the 18th Amendments, they want to throw them out. They don't believe in them at all. They think that the taxation is essentially authorized robbery from that standpoint.
Okay.
You know.
So, but this is where I was, and I'm going to bring Greg in here because I don't want to be the guy who's only the one who's going to be arguing against you. And Greg is wonderful, so let me bring Greg in to talk about because I think Greg and I are of the same ilk in that if businesses would allow, and Bob wants to get back in on the constitutional issue, so I'm going to open up all three of your mics now, Bob, Bobby, and Greg, your mics are hot. Welcome to the show. Greg, do you want to tell
Before
Mr. Rodrigo where he's
though,
just off his nut?
Before you say the word, I never said I agree with the Sixth Amendment.
Hold on a second. Go ahead, Bob.
Let me ask you this, Bobby. What does the commencement of prohibition have to do with any of this? And what does the direct election of senators by the people have to do with your argument? That's where you lost me, because the 17th Amendment
covers... I never
raised
that as an argument. I never said that.
You said...
What I said was
the 16th, 17th, and 18th Amendments were where we got off the track.
No, what I said was, that's not what I said. What I said was that the Liberty Movement does not like the 16th, 17th, and 18th Amendment. I never said I agreed with that. I'm just saying what the Liberty Movement said. I also never said that I was in agreement that the 16th Amendment should be repealed. I never said that. I was expressing what the Liberty Movement said. My position is that corporations are not people, period. I couldn't care if they made an amendment that said it was, and just like the move to amend society wants to make an amendment that corporations are not people. Corporations are not people. They never will be. They never were intended to be by the founders. The Constitution never says that they are. Somewhere along the way, the United States Supreme Court decided to put that in a decision without it even being in before them. And then, and on top of that, they stuck it in Article 1, Subsection 1 of the United States Code. And I went to the Republican United States Senate debate here in Georgia on Saturday night with my press pass. The first thing that happened is I went to Jack Kingston to ask a question, and he ran from me, and he was And he actually said on camera, I have him on camera, you're all going to see
who
this.
Who ran from you?
Congressman Jack Kingston. Congressman.
Oh, okay.
From Georgia. And he said, I don't know your organization. You might be a George Soros plant. And I said, what, am I not white enough for you? So,
ouch.
Oh, my.
I have that on camera. You're going to love it. I went up to Paul Brown, and I asked him, how come you voted for the indefinite detention of the NDAA, for example? He goes, there is no indefinite detention of the NDAA. And, you know, I about fell out of my chair when I heard that, and I wasn't in the chair. I went up to Derek Grayson, and I asked him, do you believe that corporations are people? Right on camera, and he gave me his answer, no, they're not. And he is considered a constitutionalist out of the group, and that
now,
is an absolute.
Now, this is who? This is Kingston
Derek,
again?
Derek Grayson. He's running for
the Derek Grayson,
Senate,
okay. Okay.
So, but I never said that I personally think that the 17th, 18th, and 16th Amendments should be repealed. I was just stating what the Liberty Movement says. I am working on the premise that our rule of law and our framework should be followed, and any solution that we have the tools to fix it. I don't want to fundamentally change our framework. I don't want to see a constitutional convention until we get these fools out of our government and all this money out of our government, because we never know what's going to come out of that convention if we have these nuts up there just running anything up the plumbet.
Bobby, but hold on. Referee throwing, there's a flag on the play. Right? So everyone here agrees with you on that. We all need to wrest control of our government back to the people. We everybody here agrees on that. Okay? So here's what I'm trying to get at with this topic. Now, fast forward yourself past, you know, to the day when that happens.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of legislative agenda are you going to put forward that is not going to, I don't know, not going to have taxation, not going to have any redistribution, not going to have any social safety net, not going to have any social in place that is going to get our country back, get everybody employed, so that they can fend for themselves, because they'll have to, and get people out of poverty. I mean, how are you going to do that without having a little bit of a heavy-handed government doing that for you, forcing you to do that?
I don't believe that government should be out of the social safety net business. I've never said that. Not one little bit. I believe that the states need to be more responsible for it and accountable for it, but I'm not a believer that the states can do it better than the federal government, because I'm not blind to the money being in the state government as much as it is in the federal government. Maybe I don't know what the solution is, because I've never lived in a world that didn't have crony capitalism. You know, it seems to me like the free market.
How
works.
Old are you, Bobby?
I'm 51 years old. And
okay,
please tell me when there wasn't crony capitalism in
so
my
I
world.
Wanted to get a frame of reference on that.
Right. So please tell me when there wasn't crony. There certainly was in the 60s. There definitely was in the 70s, because that was after the Powell Doctrine. That's when all this stuff really, really started, was when Powell wrote that ridiculous memorandum and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce jumped all over it, and they made Powell a Supreme Court justice. Boy, wasn't that fun. You know, the
all right, well, then I think, Bobby, hold on a second. I think I misunderstood what you said then, because when you came on board, I thought I understood you to say that socialism was not the answer and was not – and then furthermore,
not,
it was not within the framework of the Constitution.
Right, but social safety nets by a government is not socialism, Dan. Having that position is not socialism. No, it's not.
It's not.
What
it's the government telling you fork over money. It's the government telling you to fork over money to take care of people who need to be taken care of. It's forced redistribution of wealth.
If you get unhealthy enough, or otherwise need it because of advanced age. Yeah.
I don't believe social safety nets are quote unquote socialist, having a socialist government at all. I believe
how about infrastructure? How about
shared?
How about forced taxation to pay for shared infrastructure?
Well, my
socialism?
Position on taxation is my position
yes,
on tax
is.
Well, force taxation to pay for our government is part of our Constitution. It has been,
yeah,
it has been before the 16th Amendment, actually.
Hang on a second, because I don't think I'm expressing myself too well. So, Greg, your mic's open. Hopefully you're there, and maybe you can take a swing at this.
I will begin by first apologizing for getting Bobby all riled up on Facebook right before the show started. So I'll take ownership of that one.
It makes the show way more interesting when Bobby's riled up.
You know what? There may be a point to what Bobby is saying, as much as if you take things in a very literal sense. I don't think anything that you and I have talked about before, Dan, or the kinds of things that we've talked about online, perhaps, really would qualify as socialism in a literal sense. But I think where you and I seem to agree, and I don't suspect anybody right now disagrees with this idea, and that is that some portion of our existence, our work, our earnings, have to be pooled, collected, and used in a collective sense if we're going to live in a modern, somewhat comfortable, perhaps even somewhat functioning society. I mean, none of us are capable of building the infrastructure that we all need. We have to do that in a collective sense. I think where the line begins to get drawn, or perhaps where the gap begins to exist, at least as from where I sit and what I observe, is in fact the idea of things like social safety net programs. The fallacy that everyone is capable of achieving some degree of wealth, maybe even some degree of comfort, is just it's a childish myth to believe that everyone's capable of doing that. So the question in my mind becomes, are you simply just going to turn your back on part of humanity, or will you be willing to take something out of your own pocket, whether it's a government-run program or not? You know, again, I will say to those listening, this notion of private institutions and charities being sufficient to take care of the poor and indigent, please, that's never worked in the history of mankind. It's certainly not going to work in a culture and in a society where we value wealth above all else.
Which we have been doing since Cain and Abel. We have had this problem of greed and power since Cain and Abel, without question, and it sucks. But the reality is that if all of us here are around the same age, and in our lifetime and the history of this country, we have never had a country that recognize the individual equally ever, including today.
I won't disagree with that.
And if we did that, truly did that in this country, then how many of the problems that are in society economically would fall away? We wouldn't need discrimination laws. We wouldn't even have to have a check mark as to what race you are on a form, because it wouldn't matter. Because
right,
there
I
is
agree.
Only one yeah. race. So if you want to talk about socialism, let's talk about the human race as a collective, as opposed to minorities. And we have never done that in this country. It sucks. We are way more sexist than racist. It's ridiculous what we do to women in this country. They still do not receive the access to money the way we do. If we solve that, and that's all cronyism, and it's horror. It's hatred and cronyism. If we solve that problem, we
right.
wipe away so many economic ills in this country. It's ridiculous.
It's Greg, and I agree with everything you've just said. In fact, I'm going to bolster it, I think, just a little bit by giving you guys the post that was on the Facebook page today, Dan, that I thought was the most erudite post of all of them. Came from what looks like to be a young woman. I won't read her name because she's not here, but her post is only a few lines long, and it says it all. It says, now she's making a comment about somebody else who claims to live in Scandinavia. Okay, so I'm not going to claim to go into this debate about, you know, whether Scandinavian countries are better, but here's what she says. She says, in Scandinavia, excuse me, you have a culture that is inherently compatible with socialized services. You value sharing, community, the value of the whole, all wonderful things and things that make me want to move there. These values are incompatible with American culture. which is all about the elevation of the individual. So there, Bobby, I think there is maybe some room for discussion and debate around this idea of individualism. I don't think that's the argument you're making, but I just wanted to make, kind of throw that out and make sure that why this notion of all for one and one for all doesn't seem to really fit into our you know, within my own lifetime, this idea that the individual is more important than the community is why we continue to fight and struggle and battle over this idea of the notion that we shouldn't be funding social safety net programs because it just goes to people who are too lazy to work, you know, stuff like that.
So hang on before you do. I'm going to step in here because, since you're not going to, I'm going to read my comment, which came directly after that, right, and in response to that, right? And this is what I said to that lady. I said, if what you say is true and American nature is incompatible with socialism, and then I said, BTW, I don't agree, then perhaps we deserve what we Americans have created. Education in the toilet, crumbling infrastructure, underfunded first respondents, 1 in 5 children living in poverty, 1 in 6 veterans homeless, highest crime rates of any industrial country by a huge margin. Does that make you proud to be an American? If not, shouldn't we do something about it? That was my answer to that post. I was proud of myself for not, like, throwing in lots of expletives to latives. I was so angry. I'm like, if that's what your idea of Americans are, then we are. We deserve everything we get.
I don't believe her. Did you see her reply to you after that?
No, I didn't. Darn it.
Yeah. You'd like to hear her?
Sure. Absolutely.
So again, I'm going to editorialize this just a little bit maybe I should do that. What she says is, that's why I was saying I want to move to Scandinavia. Too many blank blanks here.
Say it. That's not bad. I'm reading it right now. Read it verbatim. It's all good.
So she says, too many ignorant hillbillies here who will never change regardless of how much we hope to the contrary. Arizona is about to pass modern Jim Crow laws. You can kill brown children in Florida.
We'll see.
You can kill brown children.
They didn't get it passed in Kansas, which blew my mind because I thought Kansas was a done deal, and they did not get it passed in Kansas.
I guess we're going to find out. But she does go on to say, and again, you can only make so much of a point writing on Facebook. But I'm with her on a lot of this, and she says you can kill brown children in Florida and get away with it. 20 children died at Sandy Hook, and not one gun regulation was passed. And more people own guns now than prior. I'm really with her on this. I'm proud to be an American. But that doesn't mean I take pride in all Americans. I'm totally with her on that.
To answer
what you asked me about the individualism, I think that, yeah, we are talking about two different things.
Okay.
Dan mentioned something earlier that I'll use as an analogy. He mentioned Star Trek. Now, I have given Star Trek's community a lot of thought. I probably have read at least 150 books relative to the series. I think Star Trek is the greatest science fiction ever written, actually, because I've read the books, not just because of the shows and the movies, but I like Roddenberry's concept. There was an episode of The Next Generation that went back in time to San Francisco, and they met Samuel Clemens. And he jumped into the future temporarily and was walking around the spaceship with Deanna Troi, and he was asking her, he said, I've come from a world where people step on the backs of, and we all know what Clemens was. I mean, he totally got the world even back then. It's the same thing we're dealing with now. And he says, I come from a world where the greed of men and they step on the backs of people's necks to get ahead, and you're telling me that this doesn't exist anymore. And she said, that's right. And he says, well, maybe it's good I'll give up cigars after all. You know, the Star Trek theory, and what my analogy is that they eliminated poverty, they eliminate all these things, and the competition is to better oneself. And that's the kind of individualism I prefer. I do not prefer the individualism that incorporates greed and cronyism and I must be the one. And you know, and of course, we've been dealing with this, like I said, since Cain and Abel. If you think about it, one of the ways we have refused to evolve in this world is by eliminating greed and eliminating being self-centered and eliminating being conquerors and racist. You know, we and sexist. We have never made any strides against this as a human race, as a society. We do it as individuals, but not as a society. We, you know, if, like I mentioned earlier, if we change the way we treat each other in this country legally, the laws, like Arizona's ridiculous. Oh, geez. All of these things that are being created in the name of, well, I'm better than you. That's what that is. All these laws are created, the I'm better than you laws. You know, that I saw, I saved a photo today that I'm going to post that was a picture of the 60s where they had the black youth sitting across the counter of a restaurant, and they're sending a message to Arizona says, we've already heard this story before back then. And, you know, and that's all this is I'm a better than you law. We continue to make them, and we continue to stay divided. I totally believe that if we work together as a society to rein in our elected officials and take the money out of it, and we make them do what we want them to do for everybody, that's the socialism I want. Make them fools in Congress do this right, and in the state Congresses do this right, or we're going to have to change our rule of law and make things different, because I don't want to just have us going fly by night. We need structure, but we don't need to be taking away. I don't, you know, Greg, you mentioned something earlier about our discussion and how we were sold as a society after 9/11 about the Patriot Act. Totally true. I was not sold. That doesn't mean I'm better than you or whoever was sold. I just was not sold. I learned a long time ago that from my own experiences that I don't trust these guys. I wouldn't care what was happening until I vet, and get through to the bottom of it and go, okay, well, that's true. Because we get burned all the time. I was watching a video the other day about how much we are lied to by our government. I mean, when we did the Kuwait, they had a woman on there saying how they were going into the hospital and they was taking the babies out of, I don't know if you guys remember this, was on television, they'd taken the babies out of the incubators and killing them. And it was completely fabricated. But it was to polarize us to get us into a damn war. It's crazy. And it's our government doing this. The guy, the girl was the daughter of the ambassador. And I'm like, oh, my God. We just keep – and then what Vice Admiral McRaven did.
Well, I tell you what, Bobby, hang on. I got to take a pause for the cause here, and let's come back. And I'm very mad at myself because I think we had Anthony, the original gentleman who was talking about the Star Trek Society and the Venus Project and whatnot. And it's just as I was about to bring him into the conversation again, he seemed to have left. So Anthony, if you're out there, please, and you're listening to this, please call back in. Or anybody who's listening to this who wants to get in this conversation at 646-929-2495. But for now, let's learn about all of the different coffee party.
Hi, this is Dan Aronson, and you're listening to Press One for Democracy, heard here every Monday night on Coffee Party Radio starting at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Did you know that there's an entire lineup of Coffee Party Radio shows that airs each week? On Thursdays, our executive director, Janine Loudon, hosts Lunch with Loudon, starting at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. On Saturdays, Egberto Willis hosts Politics Done Right, starting at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And the newest edition of our Coffee Party Radio family joins us on Sundays at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's Bud Fields with Progressive Politics Tennessee Style. And remember, unlike our current federal government, Coffee Party Radio is of the people, by the people, and for the people. Each show, you'll have the chance to call in at area code 646-929-2495 so you can stand up and be heard. When you can't make it with us live, remember that all of our shows are available to you 24/7 in our online archives. So again, this is Dan Aronson on behalf of all Coffee Party Radio hosts and our entire membership, saying thanks for joining us to discuss the issues of the day, the Coffee Party way.
And there you have it, the Coffee Party Radio lineup for the week. Welcome to Press One for Democracy. Hope you're having a good time hanging out. We've got about 30 minutes left before I get back to my panel of experts and riled up folks like Bobby Rodrigo and the riler upper Greg Rusick and our constitutional scholar Bob Woodward. Bob had asked me to catch you guys up on a post he had put into the chat room for those of you listening. And that, boy, it keeps bouncing around to me. It says, will we have to come to a civil war before we put nation before parties, or would a constitutional convention at least give us the chance to let diplomacy slash politics slash democracy win the day? Now, I'm going to open up Bobby's microphone, and he's going to tell us why. And I will before I do that, I'll tell you, a constitutional convention scares me. Not for the kind of hyperbolic reasons that a lot of people give. I don't believe that there's a lot of insanity going on, but there's evolutionary change. There's slow change, like conservatives like it. That used to be the basis of conservative philosophy, was slow change. You know, yes, change is good, but let's, you know, take it slow, make sure it's working out before we go too far. There's radical change, and then there's revolutionary change, which obviously an Article 5 convention would be. And I kind of like the way we have it now, where we do have a process for changing our Constitution. We can amend it any time we want. It's a, you know, somewhat of an arduous process, but I don't know that that's not a bad thing. Let me bring Bobby in, and I know you have some strong Article 5 convention philosophies.
Yeah, well, you know, the problem is that there is a great opportunity to create amendments in our society right now. I think so divisive, so uneducated when it comes to words and what words actually mean when they're put into law, and I think that we are so ideologically driven that there's a good chance that we would wind up with some horrible changes to the Constitution. And I believe that most of the changes that we need are available without doing that. Now, I would offer that I am annoyed that the Equal Rights Amendment has never made it to a convention. You know, for example, like that one's pretty simple to me. But at this time in our country and the issues that we're talking about, whether it's Citizens United, whether it's corporate personhood, whether it's economic issues, all of those are available for solutions in different forms without having to do something radical like the convention of the states this time. I don't want to let money inside the Constitution. It's close enough now as it is. You know, we create laws all the time that totally disregard. I mean, you know, Greg and I were talking earlier, for example, and I asked him, I said, you know when the last time we declared war was legally, and we all know it was World War II. And yet look how many times we have been engaged since World War II without once having a legal declaration. And we've had two instances already where the Congress has gone and disregarded the Constitution and extended executive power to do it as he saw fit. And then John McCain in January just went in front of committee and said he wants to do it again. And I'm like, and then, of course, we see the Patriot Act. We see the indefinite detention provision of the NDAA is another reason why I don't want anybody near the Constitution. We already have amendments that totally disavow the legality of that law, and yet they made that law. So what happens if the state of Alabama, which just made a law, or just came out of committee, that they want to have the first 15 minutes of every single day in public school
dedicated to Christian prayer that is said on the congressional floor in Washington that just came out today.
So this is in Iowa?
In Alabama. In Alabama.
Oh, okay.
So
I thought you said Iowa. I live here, so.
Bob, I have to tell you a funny story about Iowa one time. You'll love it. I've been to Iowa a lot. I know a lot about it.
Okay.
So what happens is Alabama gets into inside because when you do a convention of the states can just submit amendments all they want. You know, it's different. There's two different ways to do an Article 5 convention.
Okay. But this is hold on, Bobby, because this is the kind of hyperbolic arguments that I hear all the time that why would you think twice about that? Sure, anybody could put up an amendment for anything, but it still takes three-quarters of the country to agree on it. Do you really think that three-quarters of the states are going to go along with mandating that 15 minutes, the first 15 minutes of every... That's never going to happen.
Dan, think about it. You're not thinking about this, in my view, the right way. Look at our country right now. We have how many states that are completely Republican and how many states are completely Democratic? I'm not giving credence to either side. I'm saying that I think the count is there's over 30 states right now that are completely Republican. I think it's 18 that are completely Democratic. Okay, so let's say if you're a Democrat, let's just say, and they come up with this really conservative thing. You don't think it has a chance of passing? Absolutely it does. Absolutely it does.
All right. Hang on,
Bobby. Take a breath and let Bob in here.
Yeah, if I can get in for just a minute. First, the reason I posted what I posted was so I wouldn't interrupt anybody else earlier. So I want to just kind of claim personal privilege here and get back to my point. My point is that we have become so partisan, so, if you will, slavish to crony capitalism, that we've got two choices coming down the road as I see it. Number one, to be like Ukraine is at the moment, in the midst of a civil war and on the verge of an anarchy, because the government, as I heard the latest news reports today, has completely bailed on that country. Okay, the president is in hiding somewhere in the east of Ukraine with Russian sympathizers. The other side is the anti-governmentalists, the revolutionaries have forced him out and have made him, you know, subject to arrest, yada, 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 yada. My thought is that unless we do something to reconcile the nation politically, that we will end up like Ukraine, that we will end up like Egypt, that we will end up like a nation divided against itself, which Lincoln said cannot stand. And I want to know which you two, actually which you three, think is the best solution and how to get there. Because one of those two things has to occur basically for the plot line to reach its denouement, which is the same plot line, oh, by the way, that we had in the 1840s when we had the railroad barons. We had railroad barons that were engaging our country in division, in crony capitalism, and with a denouement that reached its climax at Gettysburg. Now, would the better choice have been to have recognized, for the sake of argument, that our government was illegitimate the moment the moment Zachary Taylor died, as has been discussed on the show before, and gone about a constitutional convention at that point, or was it better that we went to civil war and had all of the pains of Reconstruction and Jim Crow laws and all of that simply because we could not reconcile our differences civilly, which is what the Constitutional Convention process is all about? I leave it to you all.
All right, let's and okay. Greg, you want to jump in?
What are your thoughts? I'm not. I guess I'm not as afraid of a constitutional convention as Bobby is. I don't think it should be something that is taken lightly. I do tend to think that states in some places in the country have the potential to run amok on a lot of things, as I've shared with you before. When it comes to a modern society and a modern civilization, I think there's a lot to be said for modernizing the framework and the structure by which that that society is governed. And I think parts of what we sometimes embrace a little too lovingly in terms of the Constitution are exactly what needs to be changed. And there are good news is there are ways to do that. We should follow those rules if we're all in agreement that those things should be changed, because none of us ought to have that ability to do it just, you know, on our own or without, without a significant amount of toil. And, you know, I just don't think we should be changing the Constitution too willy-nilly.
Okay. We've already heard Bobby's concerns. Do you want to add anything to your concerns?
Well, his question is excellent. Bob's question is an excellent question, I have to tell you. I would agree that the Constitutional Convention in theory could be the answer to civil discourse. My problem is, again, you know, I'll just ring that bell again, is that because we are so corrupt, that I am fearful that amendments would be passed, like, for example, we should have school prayer and in this country, or that this country is now a Christian nation. You know, there are people in society that believe the Constitution what is the phrase that Marr uses, was a divine intervention of some sort. We just heard that from one of our wonderful senators recently again. You know, it's not that I have anything against Christianity. I believe that everybody has the right to do what they want to do because it's inalienable. Everybody has inalienable rights. You know, and I can see something coming out of the convention that is horrid. You know, I sent Greg a link the other day for the Liberty Amendments, and you know, that's some scary stuff, and there's a big, big conservative movement to have some of that stuff, you know, and I'm not trying to, you know, there are plenty of conservative things that I hate that are in our mainstream ideology, and there are plenty of ridiculous progressive, or liberal, I'll call it, that I just can't stand because everybody wants everybody else to think like they do instead of letting everybody do what they want and do it without hurting other people. So, you know, I mean, like I said, it's a society where we're making laws that tell other people, you know, like I said earlier, it's you can't do that laws. You know, you're type of person, you're a black person, you're gay person, you're a Spanish person, you're a Muslim person, you can't do that law. We did it to the Japanese in World War II. We're doing it to the Muslim community now, in theory. We're creating laws that can do it to anybody. What's the next class that we're going to mess with? And we continue to mess with women. We continue to mess with the black community.
Let me get my plug in for messing with smokers.
Okay. All right. So, all right. So we got that. So here's my thing. I want to see a two-step process here. Step one, we get the money out. Right? We all get together. We lay down our swords. We come together over this one issue, and we learn how to work together by doing so, and we retake our government. Now, if we can't reach an accord then I would entertain the Constitutional Convention. But right now, I think, Bobby, you've hit the nail on the head, is that if we entertain a Constitutional Convention while the – Bobby Rodrigo. I call him Bobby. He's Bobby. I think he hits the nail on the head. If we convene a Constitutional Convention now when the moneyed interests own the government, the people who are going to be crafting this new Constitution, I think then we might as well just, you know, Katie bar the door, you know, the final nails go into the coffin, as they're going to anyway with
That's
things
a
like
good
the TPP.
Point.
So I want to see a two-step thing. I want to see what the world is like post getting money out of politics. Then if we can't agree, then I think we entertain the convention. That's
and what
my
if we can't
opinion.
Figure out how to get money out of politics?
Well, then
I
none
mean,
of it
what
matters.
If we can't reach agreement on that because the money in politics prevents agreement politically on that subject?
Then none of it matters. Then nothing we do here, nothing we talk about, none of it matters if we don't do it. I mean, Lawrence Lessig is absolutely right, and someday people are going to go, you know what, we all need to listen to this guy who has been saying for now 4 straight years, he's been giving speeches saying we have to put down the ideological differences, come together to force money out, because neither one of us are going to get what we want as long as the moneyed interest is there. So that's, you know, it seems obvious to me that he's right. I just don't get why we can't make that happen. It's very frustrating to me. But
it's frustrating. There's so many groups that agree with it, and then they're instantly lost in the muck and mire of the next breaking news story. You know, there's a great video that's going around, and a number of artists are doing stuff relative to this. But you know, we all know about. I think we all saw it at different times when there was an interview being done on by Andrea Kramer at MSNBC, and she had to break away to go to the Justin Bieber arrest story. And you know, she's got a you can look it up. It's amazing. She's interviewing. Who was she interviewing? I think a congresswoman, I want to say. Yeah, it was. It was somebody, I believe it was a congresswoman, either a senator or a congresswoman. You have to look it up. And she said, wait a minute, before you go on, we need to break away. And then they went to Justin Bieber being arrested in Miami.
Bread and circus, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Bread and circus.
That is an example of a prime example of what we're doing and how we're being fed to the, you know, led to the slaughter, you know, that's amazing to me.
Well,
I'm sorry, Bobby, I got to correct you,
make a slight, just a very slight correction, because this irks me no end, and I see it on our Facebook page, and I see it on everybody's Facebook page, and I read it in articles, and it just boils my blood. We are allowing ourselves to be led to the slaughter. I hate what people say. We've been misled. No. You allowed yourself to be misled. You did not verify. You did not vet. You did not do the research. Your fault. If you had the wool pulled over your eyes, please.
You are preaching to the choir. I said it earlier about our apathy. You know, it's our generation, gentlemen. Let's be real here. I say this all the time. It's our generation that caused it. If we don't make our young people aware of what the hell we did, and that please fix it. And you know, I Greg and I were talking earlier about this video I showed him, and they say something in it that's very, very important.
It's one of the reasons why I was so affected by it when I saw it in person. It was talking about how everybody was mobilized for the change that, the president talked about when he was being elected in 2008. Everybody had this energy. Everybody expected all these things that he talked about was going to happen, and he lied to us. And we've become cynical even more so. He did not change what George Bush was doing. He extended what George Bush was doing. It was nuts. If we look at all, if we just go back to what Obama said he was going to do, and he didn't do any of it.
You're absolutely right, Bobby. And you know what? We actually have a new caller. I'm going to open 620 up. I believe it's our good friend Jack Golding. Jack, is this you? 620, your mic is hot. Is this Jack? Jack, are you there? Jack Golding from Kansas. Okay. I'm going to mute your mic, Jack. I'm pretty sure this is Jack, but I'm going to go to mute your mic, Jack, and if you hit one and then one again, it'll take your hand down and raise it back up, and I'll know that you're ready to get on with us, because I always love to hear your thoughts on things. We have about 13 minutes left, so I was going to start wrapping up.
Let me officially yield the floor, okay?
Ah, okay.
I always yield the floor before I check out for the night. So since you're wrapping up, I'm gonna yield the floor.
So you're yielding your time to the gentleman from whichever one we decide to yield it to. Okay, Bob, thank you very
That's
much
right.
as always for your awesome participation. Wanted to say one thing before we started wrap-ups. Chad Long did post a great article about Tea Party and liberals convening to discuss the Constitutional Convention. It's actually in the Harvard Law today. So, you know, there are places where the bridge is being built, where the gap is being filled in, where the divide is being lessened, and that's really what we need to do if we're going to get anywhere. Bobby, Rodrigo, final thoughts for this evening?
Great show. I just applaud the fact that we're trying to do something about it. Let's just keep trying to do something about it, and let's just keep educating each other and as many people as we can.
Thank you. You sound spent. You sound like you spent it all out there on the field. So sounds like you'll sleep well tonight. Have a great night. Thank you, Robert Rodrigo from Georgia. Mr. Russick, any final thoughts from you, sir?
It was another excellent discussion on a really important topic. The post itself today on Facebook maybe didn't capture really the essence. And it's too bad that more people don't take advantage of dialing in and joining the discussion. In fact, I was having a Twitter chat with somebody by the name of Robot J. McCarthy, who saw me tweet about the show and express some commentary about it, and I tried to get him to call in, but that didn't work out. So the more we interact, the more we exchange information, the more likely we are to put aside our differences and figure out what we have to get done first to solve some of our big problems. That the biggest problem, it seems like we all agree on, is the corruption that exists in our government, and that corruption comes from money. So if we could just maybe just keep a focus on that sort of an idea, we ought to be able to push things forward and in a direction where at least at some point, hopefully in our lifetimes, we'll believe that our representatives actually do represent us and not the moneyed interest. Because Bobby's concerns, I think, are somewhat valid when it comes to the Constitutional Convention. When 0.1% accounts for the vast majority of campaign contributions, then those people in state legislatures will also be their representatives. Who knows what would happen if 3/4 of them got together and decided they were going to make some change. Hang on, be so good. So good show, Dan.
I hear you.
As always.
Oh, no problem. All right, and I'm going to try one more time to open up 620's microphone. If this is you, Jack, if you are there, 620, your microphone is open. Are you there, 620? Jack Golding. Okay, I guess we lost Jack. You might be talking to the mute button. All right. Well, we tried to get you on, Jack. I'm sorry about that. Anyhow, you've been listening to Press One for Democracy. I think it's been a fun show. We got a little bit on topic, a little bit off topic. We talked about a lot of different things. But hey, that's the whole nature of a call-in radio show. You go with what you got up front, and then sometimes it morphs into other things. It's all good as long as we keep talking, like Greg said. As long as we keep having these discussions. I, too, wish more people would come here and have these live discussions. Maybe it's a time slot factor. Maybe it's just easier for people to express their views behind a keyboard in somewhat anonymous fashion. I don't know. But whatever it is, as long as we keep the lines of discussion open, we do have a chance. And as long as we are willing to listen respectfully to our political opposites and have these types of discussions. And even if we don't agree with them, at least, sometimes it's one thing that I've learned in my life is that a lot of times people just want to be heard. And they want to know that they've been heard, and they want to know that they've been heard in a respectful manner, even if you disagree with them. So sometimes instead of being really quick to dismiss people because maybe they seem way out in left field, you just go, oh, that's a very interesting point of view. I respect you for sharing that with me. We'll just have to agree to disagree and then move on to the next topic. But, and that is, of course, the coffee party way, right? Transpartisan, civil, fact-based. That's what we're all about here. This is Dan Aronson. Join us every Monday night here for Press One for Democracy at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Join Jeanine Loudon, our executive director, for her wonderful Lunch with Loudon show every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Egberto Willis, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Saturday with Politics Done Right. And Bud Fields at 2 p.m. or I'm sorry, at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time with it's a little bit of an alliteration. Always a little tongue twister for me. Progressive Politics, Tennessee Style. Again, thank you for listening in. It's been a pleasure and an honor, and please come back and visit us often, we will see you next time around. Have a great night. Watching the ships roll in, then I watch them roll away again. Yeah. Sitting on the dock, watching the tide. I left my